And this is the most important part. No matter what you are doing during your auction or your draft, you are sacrificing something for speed.
Welcome to episode 160 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. My name is George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus. We've got a great show lined up. We're going to continue our positional preview series with outfielders. But before we do that, let me welcome in my co-hosts. This is a new format, by the way, for the intro here tonight, guys. So he is BP's managing editor, and he's keenly aware of the fact that the Mets now have a higher payroll than the Rays and Marlins combined. He is Brett Sayer.
What's going on?
Not much. Just J.D. Martinez is in Boston, so that's exciting. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Very excited about that. My other co-host is a veteran writer on the BP Fantasy staff. He spent the entire day regretting the fact that he didn't reach for John Gray in the CBS NL-only draft. He is Mike Gianella. What's going on, Mike?
I really wanted John Gray.
It's sad. Everyone should have John Gray. Everyone should have that happiness.
So before we begin the podcast, a quick word from our sponsor. Attention baseball fans, spring training is rolling, which means it's time to think fantasy baseball. Yahoo has the best fantasy baseball experience in the game. Get the stats and analysis you need to run your team like a big league general manager. Yahoo Fantasy has been rated number one by the FSTA 5 years in a row. Draft, trade, and manage your team right from your phone. Download the Yahoo Fantasy app today to create or join a league. So easy, it's ridiculous. Or sign up at yahoo.com/flagsflyforever. Yahoo Fantasy Baseball, the official fantasy game of Major League Baseball. Guys, we're continuing the position preview series. We've got outfielders coming up. But first, before we do that, a little bit of housekeeping. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read our fantasy positional series. We have 21 articles per week coming at you, from redraft rankings to dynasty rankings, three-year rankings, tail of the tape, state of the position, get to know prospects. 20 articles just isn't enough. So we've got that going on. We're in the middle of outfield week, so we got starting pitchers coming up next week in the series. So the BP annual, the 2018 BP annual, is on sale. It's shipped. I just got my copy in the other day. The cover is fantastic, by the way, Brett.
I am completely blanking on the person who did the design, but it is the same person who did the design of last year's cover as well.
It's very cool. So if you haven't ordered the 2018 BP annual, do that today. There's still plenty of time. You can follow all of us on Twitter. Mike is at Mike Gianella, Brett is at Brett Sayer BP, and I am at George Bissell. Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. The podcast is now going to be available on both Google Play and Stitcher. Finally ironed out those issues here today. So those should be up when you're listening to this. It should be available on both of those platforms as well. So a lot of things going on in the housekeeping department. But now it's time to talk outfielders. So Let me start off with you, Mike. I just kind of want to get your general sense on your strategy for the position, because we're going to talk about players individually, and we're going to use your fantasy tiered rankings, which are up at BP right now. But how do you approach the position in general? Because it feels to me like the league context, in terms of what your league settings are, how many teams, how many outfields you start, it matters more in the outfield than pretty much any other position group in the game.
Yeah, I would say so, because, you know, so if you're in a shallow league, or if you're one of those like weird leagues that uses like a three outfielders to start, then, yeah, you have a lot of flexibility, that there's a lot of options. You should really look to play matchups in leagues like that. And, you know, I know, Brett, that's something you've talked to well, both on the site and elsewhere. you know, whereas in a deep league like today's CBS NL, you really want to try to get volume and not mess around too much with speculative plays. So, yeah, a lot of strategies, a lot of different ways to approach it. Doesn't even mean there's a right way in each league format or size, but it is something to consider. It's something to consider with these ranks, too. And I pointed out in the article where, you know, some of the three-star guys, and we'll get into them, you know, in a shallower league, that's the bottom of your pool, and you probably want to go for upside there more than you want to go for the boring veterans. Whereas like a Shin-Soo Choo in a deep league, you know, he's a pretty good guy to have. You want to try to have someone like that who, you know, is productive and, you know, isn't just a speculative play.
Yeah. Of all the positions that we cover, I mean, even more than starting pitching these days, outfield rankings are very dependent on format and league size. So, you know, like Mike was saying, it's important to know your league when you read rankings online. Hopefully they're ours, but when you read any of them, just because you never know what format the ranker has in mind when they're looking at it. And two, the ranker doesn't know your format when you're looking at it.
I think the biggest reason it matters is because you need to be aware of what the replacement level is going to be. If you're in a shallower format, one that only, you know, is 12 teams, or you only start three outfielders, you're going to have more quality options available in season on the waiver wire. If you're in a deeper format, this is very simple stuff, but you'd be amazed how often it gets overlooked. You need to, I think, address the position a little bit earlier in drafts. I know just for me personally, I don't know if I'm in the minority on this, but I definitely like to get two, sometimes even three, really good quality early round outfielders, especially if I'm in a deeper format, because I feel like the options at the back end of the position I feel like are really risky, and I don't like having more than maybe one or two of those guys on my roster. I don't know what you guys think. You've done a couple of drafts now, but do you feel like you have to address the position early on, especially in a snake draft? Or it's a little easier to pull off in an auction, but do you feel the need to address outfield early?
No, I don't feel the need to address any position early, really. I mean, we've gotten, the offensive environment has flattened all the positions so much that it really the first 10 or so players that I take, I'm not even looking at position.
Okay. Mike, do you have any thoughts on that, or?
I generally agree. You know, something I have noticed, you know, now I've done a couple onlys, so that's different. Like you do want to make sure that you don't get stuck, you know, with three or even four outfielders who are either backups or platoon guys. But yeah, otherwise I agree with Brett. Like even in a deep mixed, you can find people later on are going to be productive enough. And, you know, the other point about this, and we've talked about this all year, outside of catcher, the idea of position scarcity, it's really doesn't exist the way it used to. Like, you can find players at almost any position outside of a two-catcher league who are going to be productive on the back end of your draft.
All right, so the five-star tier, there are six names in it. We're following along with Mike's tiered rankings, which are up at Baseball Prospectus right now. The six names are Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, Charlie Blackmon, Bryce Harper, Giancarlo Stanton, and J.D. Martinez. I don't think any of us really have anything revolutionary to say about the first four names on this list, but the last two I think are interesting for different reasons. And Mike, I'll start with you on Giancarlo Stanton. The move to New York, I think we all would agree that it raises his realistic floor, but are you worried about him returning five-star value this season, or is that not even entering the equation for you?
Well, worry is a strong word. I do think it's possible that he's more of a mid to high four-star guy. You know, there's always that possibility. You know, it wasn't that long ago. You know, you go back to 2016, and I think what gets lost in Giancarlo getting hurt that year, he didn't have a very good year when he was on the field. And I'm not saying that is going to happen, but, you know, all I'm saying about him is he's not automatic like a Mike Trout or a Jose Altuve. And, you know, people aren't drafting him that high, but I do feel there's some enthusiasm about him where I've seen some fantasy managers stretch and take him like as a sixth or seventh overall pick. Mm. I'm just not that confident about him. And, you know, if he only hits like 45 to 50 home runs, that's really good, obviously. But if you have an expectation where he's going to hit 60 to 65 because he's in Yankee Stadium, could it happen? Sure. You know, will it happen? Just don't bet on it happening, because it's just not something that's a certainty for any player.
He did make a legitimate swing change, I want to say, with his stance last year, closing it off. And there, you know, we finally got to see what a full season of Stanton looked like. So I don't have a problem with him going this high in a draft or putting him in the five-star tier. I just think of these names, he's probably the riskiest option. Brett, I feel like we've talked about Stanton a lot, but he's the guy I'm just not as excited about drafting in the first round as some of these other names that we've talked about this year.
Yeah, I mean, Mike knows this because we talked about it before labor, but I had Giancarlo Stanton ranked outside of the first round when I put together my top 300, and honestly, it wasn't even particularly close. I had him, I believe, at 20th overall. And there's nothing wrong with Stanton, but you're not getting a guy who you can count on to stay healthy. And you're not getting a guy who you can really count on to be a consistently elite fantasy performer when he is on the field. I mean, if you're going to take someone in the first round with the injury history that Stanton has, you need that player to be just about, if not the best, probably a top three fantasy player when they are healthy consistently. And Stanton is not that. You know, not only that, and you mean this matters less for a superstar, but, you know, we talk about the National League to American League thing. You know, I know he's going into a better lineup and into a better park. Not the park really matters for Stanton all that much, but it's the transition from National League to American League can be a little rough. And, you know, I don't expect him to be a top five fantasy player when he's healthy, and he doesn't stay healthy enough for me to invest a first round pick in.
I think you bring up a good point that you're going to need elite plus production in power and counting stats from Stan. And you're also going to need the batting average to remain high. And there's no guarantees of that. I mean, last year was a nice bounce back in batting average, but in the past he struggled in that department. So look, it feels like we're being negative on Stanton, but at some point you have to pick nits with these guys in the first and second round range, and Stanton's an easy guy to find things to pick at. Let's move down to JD Martinez, Mike. He's a guy who, I don't know if there was a ton of debate about him being in the five-star tier or not, but he's one of the best hitters in baseball. Four-category elite contributor fantasy-wise, and now that he's in Boston, what are your expectations for him this season?
Well, first of all, there was no debate, which surprised me a little bit. I included him here initially hoping to spark some conversation or get some reactions, and I didn't. And that surprised me a little bit, because I thought some people might look at him and go, well, you know, he's on the cusp of elite, but he isn't. Now, keep in mind, I put these rankings together, and this article came out before he signed with Boston. And I wasn't assuming that he would. You know, I just kind of like left it open-ended. I saw an analysis that kind of talked about him and looked at Boston and, you know, kind of looked at the impact of his fly balls and the Green Monster and pointed out that it's sort of a neutral change for him. It's not necessarily a positive change. But his power is so prodigious that it doesn't really matter. You know, it's funny, you know, we talk about Giancarlo and how good he is. And, you know, JD isn't quite in that class as a power hitter, but he's like half a step or maybe three quarters of a step behind Stanton. And he just doesn't quite get that respect. Now, some of that is because he's had some injuries and, you know, he was a bit of a late bloomer in terms of the power. But where he is now, he's a legitimate player for me. And, you know, he's the other side of Stanton, where I think what he did last year in the second half, he obviously won't do that for the whole season. But he's streaky enough and he's strong enough that him hitting 40, 45 home runs at a minimum shouldn't really surprise anybody if he stays healthy and he manages to play.
For me, Brett, I think the biggest thing is now it looks like he's going to DH every day in Boston at this point, and that eliminates the biggest risk in his profile, which was health. He'd injured himself twice in right field the last 2 years, so does that also improve his fantasy stock a little bit for you now that it looks like he's going to be in that lineup every single day and those health risks are gone?
Wasn't this exactly what we said about Hanley Ramirez?
Well, Hanley's an effort. Thing, I mean, really, right? Like it's.
I know where you're going with. It.
No, Hanley's more of like an effort thing, right? Like, is he trying hard? Is he mentally there, committed? I don't know.
And Hanley's shoulders were like completely messed up.
Yeah. Point is, not a performance thing, but yes, yeah, someone is less likely to get hurt as a designated hitter than they are as a fielder, but. It doesn't eliminate that risk, and thinking that it eliminates that risk is a dangerous way of thinking, because he is going to play in the field. He's not going to just DH all the time, and you know sometimes it seems, and this is purely anecdotal, sometimes it seems when players start DHing and then get into the field, they're more likely to get hurt when they're in the field than they were when they were playing every day.
That's a fair point. I don't disagree with that. I just think it's interesting because Martinez has missed big chunks of time due to injury. So if they can find a way to keep him in there every day, that definitely helps. All right. Anybody have anything else to say about anyone in the 5-star tier? I don't want to shut anyone out if they have a point that needs to be made.
I mean, these guys are all really great. You know, all of them. You know, with the exception of maybe Martinez in a 15-team league or first round picks, maybe Stan's not quite there if you're down on him like Brett is, but he's certainly pretty close.
Okay, so the 4-star tier, there are 18 names in it. We're gonna try to touch on as many of these guys as we can, but I want to start off with two names that really stand out to me because they're speed oriented profiles. And the way I want to talk about Byron Buxton and Billy Hamilton is, you know, I look at your evaluations from last year, Mike, and this is where you don't just want to read off valuations without any context, but I think it's important to note that of the 20 outfielders, I should say, who cracked $20 in mixed league value in 15 teams last year, at least 12 of them had a dozen steals or more. So stolen bases, we've talked a lot about this offseason. They're insanely valuable in fantasy right now because of the scarcity. And Byron Buxton and Billy Hamilton, I know people are opposed to drafting them just philosophically because it feels like they're sort of speed-only guys, but they're pretty high-floor options in this tier, I think more so than fantasy owners realize.
Well, you know, there's two separate things going on with the two of them, though. So Hamilton's established, so that is a straight up valuation argument, and people are saying, you know, well, you know, I know he's going to steal 60 bases or a shade under, you know, he's done that for years, but that's all he does, and there's not much else there. You know, it's funny. I ran the PFM for a 15 team league without steals, you know, not just for him, but for anybody. And his other contributions make him like a fifth outfielder in 15-team mix. It's obviously not good, but it kind of lays rest of the myth that without his steals, he does nothing. I mean, he does a little bit, and there's a lot with those steals.
Yeah.
You know, Buxton's just the other side of it, where I think what people are worried about with him is the risk. You know, they're looking at him, they're looking at a guy who's been all over the place, and you know, he's had these horrible stretches, and, you know, in 2016, he was great for a month. You know, last year he was great for like 2 months or 2.5 months. You know, I forget the exact like window. And they're worried that, you know, he's going to start out the year and just be bad. You know, my ranking on Buxton is a really high faith ranking. I look at a player who, you know, we looked at as a prospect who had all this ability and all these skills, and I saw it come together for him last year in a way I didn't see it come together for him in 2016. So, you know, it's two different discussions, and if you don't want to get these guys, that's okay. But to your point, George, if you don't, you're going to have to probably find your speed somewhere else. Mm.
Brett, where do you stand on Hamilton and Buxton? I know we touched on it on last week's show with the labor recap with Hamilton specifically, but I'd be interested in what you think about Buxton being in the four-star tier.
I completely agree with it. Everyone is a GM these days, for better or worse, and it makes people more aware of players' real life value than it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Hamilton is not a good baseball player. He's an okay baseball player. And he is a really good fantasy player, and it's okay to be both. I think some people just aren't comfortable with him being both. I think it extends a little bit to Buxton as well, but in a different way. But the argument that people don't like taking one category guys, one is wrong because Hamilton is at least a two category guy. He scored 85, 86 runs last year.
Yeah, 85.
Which, yep, last I checked, is pretty good. But the other thing is that, and this is the most important part, no matter what you are doing during your auction or your draft, you are sacrificing something for speed. Whether you do it over the course of three players, you do it over the course of three players, and you take three guys that are, 15 homer, 20 steal guys, instead of taking a 30 homer bat, but you add them all together, and it's really just math. You're sacrificing all four other categories at some point for speed. You can do it once, you can do it multiple times. I get the argument that if you're putting all your stolen base eggs in Billy Hamilton's basket and Hamilton gets hurt, then you are a little bit more exposed. You have more risk. So if you have one guy who you think can get 60 steals and three guys who you think can get 20, if Hamilton misses 3 months, then the guy who has Hamilton is in more trouble in the category. But it's a cop-out argument because those are probably the same people who would absolutely be in favor of taking one of the aces, and you're consolidating your starting pitching value in one guy. If you take Clayton Kershaw in the first round and Kershaw misses 3 months, then you're just as screwed as if you took Billy Hamilton and he missed 3 months. So there are a lot of arguments out there. Most of them are bad, and it really is just a math problem. It's really not, it's not any more complicated than that.
That was really well said. I don't know if I have anything to add on that. I think that was, at some point you're taking on risk no matter what you decide to do. I think the devil's advocate argument against Hamilton as well, he's putting you so far behind the eight ball in terms of power or something like that. And that's just math, right? You just need to account for that later. And you did that in labor where you took a lot of power bats in the later rounds, guys like Schwarber, Jerko, Duda, Zimmerman. Like, you are able to account for that. So I don't know. I'm on board with Hamilton, and Buxton's even less of a risk for me because of the four category potentially production you're going to get from him. So we'll move on. Aaron Judge and Cody Bellinger here, Mike. They're both in this tier. It feels like we pushed him about as high as we can go here. If they're going to be four category guys, Bellinger maybe with the speed. If he's stealing double digit bases, maybe he has a shot to crack the five star tier. Where do you stand on both of these guys coming into the season?
I mean, I think they're both really good. My concerns, and particularly with Judge, is the batting average. I know that Judge had a shoulder injury and that was documented, and he came back in September and he looked great again. He hit a lot of home runs. I just feel like you watch tall players like Judge have always had that challenge in terms of keeping their stance together for a full season. I always think like back to Richie Sexton, and I'm not, this isn't a comp. Aaron Judge is better than Richie Sexton. Like, let's just, put that aside, right away. But it's more the idea that a player of Judge's height and with a stance like that is it can go through slumps and, you know, just have stretches like he did last year where he's just not going to be very good. You know, Bellinger's a different situation. You know, I look at Bellinger and I see somebody who, you know, I think the power is legitimate. I think his game is legitimate. But again, I do wonder if the batting average will kind of carry over. You know, for both these players, it's not so much a knock on them. You know, it goes back to what Brett was saying, what we're talking about with speed, which is there's so much power to get that it sounds kind of weird, but, you know, a 40 to 45 home run season, if it's not attached to that much speed or very little speed, it's not attached to a big batting average, there's kind of a ceiling to it. And I you know, it just sounds like such a weird thing to say. You know, like in an AL or NL only, I'd love to get these guys around 30. I'm just not going to push them to the point where, you know, I'm paying like 35 to 40 and making them centerpieces.
Brett, you have Bellinger and Judge 5 and 6 in your top 125 dynasty outfielder rankings. Who do you like more for this season alone?
For this season, I should have had my thing up, but I like Judge better for this year. I think Bellinger is due for a slight amount of regression as he kind of figures out what kind of hitter he's going to be. I mean, my biggest problem about Bellinger is that I don't think he's going to be both the power guy and the average guy at the same time. I think he's capable of doing either. You know, the guy who he reminds me of most actually is Will Myers when he was coming up. You know, Bellinger has, you know, a slightly lesser prospect pedigree, but you know, it was the same idea where, you know, I think we were unsure as to whether Myers was going to be a power bat who kind of didn't hit for a ton of average or an average bat and didn't hit, you know, for a crazy amount of power. I mean, he's been more of a power guy and more of a speed guy than we had thought. But you know, I don't see Bellinger as a future, you know, 300 hitter with 35 home runs. I don't think that's a realistic future for him. And I think Judge has enough power to you know, to make up for the gap in batting average, which my guess is I think is probably going to be smaller than a lot of other people do.
Mike, you're our Philadelphia correspondent. How do you square Rhys Hoskins when you're putting together these rankings? How do you figure out where the right spot to put him in is before you consult all of us, before you send it out? Because he had an incredible run there down the stretch, but well, I don't even know what to do with him at this point. It's one of those weird examples of a player that I can't figure out.
Well, the power is legitimate, and you know what you have to kind of square up is the idea that he's not going to do what he did when he first came up to the majors, and you know that's kind of obvious. It's just a balance between that and September, and you know the weird thing about his September is even though he's slumped, there was a lot to like. He still had that very patient approach, and it manifests itself in a lot of walks. And, you know, yes, the batting average was low, but you still saw a hitter who was hitting his home runs and kind of taking that patient approach. Now, if you're not in an OBP league, it obviously hurts you a little bit that, you know, Hoskins is going to have those months where he has a bad batting average. You know, what I kind of look at is if you, you know, some people point to September and kind of scream avoid, avoid. You know, if you prorate that to a full season, he's a low 40s home run hitter with a bad batting average, like a 220 average. So there's a lot of outcomes for Rhys Hoskins, but I still see a floor there, and particularly in that park, which really played as a hitter's park last year after playing kind of neutral for a few years before that. I see like a 35 home run floor with maybe like a 240, 250 batting average. And I think he can do better than that, you know, even if it doesn't come in 2018. He's just a really good hitter.
Brett, do you have any Rhys Hoskins thoughts? Or he's so interesting to me. I don't know what to do with him almost.
I have no Rhys Hoskins hot takes.
Let me ask you about Christian Yelich then, because he's a guy we collectively as a group and a podcast, I think we've all liked for a long time, but since 2013, I think only Nori Aoki has hit more ground balls, a higher percentage of ground balls, than Yelich. He had the sixth highest ground ball rate of any qualified hitter in baseball last year. Dude hits a lot of ground balls. And the narrative I've seen is that, well, now that he's in Miller Park in Milwaukee, he's going to start hitting more fly balls. He's going to start challenging for 30 home runs. How much do you buy that the move to Milwaukee clearly helps his fantasy stock, but I don't think he's a superstar as a result of it, Brett? Where do you stand on Yelich right now?
No, I think what it does is it makes it more realistic that he maintains his power, not that he moves it forward. I mean, the last I checked, the outfield fences in Miller Park are still in the outfield. you know, he is, unless, you know, obviously there's the disclaimer that at any point he could reasonably change his launch angle and hit more home runs and become a very different hitter. But, you know, barring that, which you should never expect, you know, I think Yelich has been performing at the top end of his power recently, and I think this does allow him to. I feel pretty good about him getting the 20 homers in Milwaukee. I didn't necessarily feel that good about him getting the 20 homers in Miami. But what this also does is, you know, it's a better lineup. It's more counting stats. It's more, more a lot of things. So I think everything kind of rises a little bit. But no, I don't expect him to start hitting 30 home runs now that he's in Milwaukee.
Mike, I probably should have gone to bat for Justin Upton a little bit more when we were in the process of putting these rankings together, but he turns 30 years old. He's in Los Angeles. He's going to probably bat cleanup behind Mike Trout. He's coming off a season in which he hit 273 with 35 homers. He even stole 14 bases. I have a really hard time envisioning Justin Upton being terrible this year. I think he has a shot to get in the five-star tiers if everything comes together, or did we just see his best season, his peak Upton campaign?
Well, you know, it's not so much that. It's that I look at it more as Justin Upton is a solid four-star guy, and in drafts, he's always a little bit underrated. You know, I know Brett, that one year we got him in labor where he was like the best like name on the board with the highest ADP. We couldn't believe he slipped to us. And he's kind of that guy again this year. Like he's 46 ADP. He's right between Marcell Ozuna and Rhys Hoskins. And, you know, you can make that argument that both those players have higher ceilings. But Upton is that reliable guy that if you pick him in the fourth round or, you know, late third round of a 15-team league, you just know what you're getting. You're getting 25 to 30 home runs. The average does, you know, tend to fluctuate, but it's, you know, never really awful except for, you know, outside of 2016. You know, as you pointed out, George, there's some steals in the profile. He should steal about 10 bases. He's just a really good player. I just don't see him as a star because I don't necessarily see anything in that profile bumping up because he's been so consistent year in and year out.
Brett, Tommy Pham, another guy I struggle to analyze. He was one of nine hitters last year to go 20-20. Look, I think you were able to highlight this in the difference between the redraft rankings and your dynasty rankings, where I don't have as much concern with Pham for 2018, but I think long term, another guy who is new to us but old to the earth. He's 30, and I struggle long-term with valuing Tommy Pham, who you have, I think, in the mid-30s in your dynasty rankings, but how do you view Tommy Pham overall? What are your thoughts on him?
I'm never going to be the high guy on a player who jumps out and does something this extreme. You know, I think his playing time and his power is relatively safe for 2018. I think the part that I really don't trust is the speed. I mean, you're talking about a guy who played in 128 games last year and stole 25 bases. Before this year, he played in 136 games and stole 4 bases. So he's clearly made an effort to steal more, but you know, going into his age 30 season, I don't expect him to steal 25 bases again. Honestly, I don't expect him to steal 15 bases again. And I think that's a big part of the valuation. I think, you know, I think a pretty good average and, you know, 25 homer power, I think is perfectly reasonable. But there's just, it's just not that interesting in this offensive environment, not nearly as much as it used to be.
So every week as a staff, we put together a target and avoids for outfielders and starting pitchers. We do a long-term target and a long-term avoid. And I pick Pham as my long-term avoid because exactly what you said, I don't know that the speed as he gets into his mid-30s, is it really going to be sustainable? And he's another guy who hits the ball on the ground more than half the time. And his ground ball rate last year and his batted ball profile was over 50%. So there are some concerns about Pham, but I'm far more likely to buy him in a redraft league than anything. But he's the guy that stands out to me in this tier that I'd be a little bit worried about. There are a bunch of names that we haven't covered yet, so I want to just open up the floor to whoever you guys want to pick. Here are your options that you can talk about from either a positive or a negative standpoint, whatever route you want to take. George Springer, Starling Marte, Andrew McCutchen, Andrew Benintendi, Marcelo Ozuna, Domingo Santana, Yoenis Cespedes, Lorenzo Cain, AJ Pollock, Chris Davis. So I'll open up the floor to you, Mike, whoever you want to talk about first.
Let's talk a little about Yoenis Cespedes. There's definitely some, you know, we've been talking a lot about power and, you know, how it's kind of easy to get and how it's almost, you don't want to like spend too much or buy too much into it. But I feel like with Cespedes, we're reaching the opposite end of the spectrum. Like this is a player who, you know, even if he's not healthy for a full season, even if you're getting 130, 140 games out of him, you know, we've seen since his emergence in 2015 that he can go through streaks or stretches where he kind of just carries your team. And you don't want to overspend for that. You don't want to get too, you know, cute with that. And honestly, his ADP has moved up a little bit in the past few days, about 10 spots, where he was sitting around 100, where I kind of liked him. And now where he is, I think he's appropriately valued. But I look at him as still as a nice source of power. Yes, there's some risk. But I do feel like, you know, taking that risk into account, you know, and assuming and hoping that, you know, this year isn't last year where he misses that many games, that if you build that in and he misses like 20 or 30, you should still be okay with him where he's being drafted.
Brett, who's the guy you want to highlight?
I want to talk about George Springer.
I knew you would.
I don't really know why more people aren't more excited about Springer. I think he is kind of getting lost in that Houston offense a little bit, which is crazy. But, you know, Springer was consistently around 24% strikeout rate in 2015 and 2016. That dropped to 17.5% last year. It dropped to 17.5% last year at the same time he was making more hard contact than in 2015 and 2016 as well. I think the .283 batting average he had last year was actually the result of him getting a little unlucky. And I think he could make a real charge at hitting .300 with his new sort of with his new approach at the plate. Between that and just the sheer number of runs he can score. I mean, he scored 112 runs, which is great, but not mind-boggling until you realize that he only played in 140 games. So he probably would have led baseball in runs scored if he had played the full season, probably would have driven in 100 from the leadoff spot as well. You know, I don't think he's going to run again. I think, you know, expecting 10 steals from him is probably a couple too many. But, you know, I think there's a reasonable chance he could hit 300 with 30 to 35 homers and just a boatload of counting stats. And he should be an easy second round pick.
All right, the guy I want to hit on real quickly. Mike mentioned ADP a moment ago, so I'm going to hop on that train for a second. Lorenzo Cain, I don't know how much of this was he was a free agent for a long time this offseason, and a lot of these drafts may have been early, and it's still only late February. But according to the NFBC's average draft position data, Lorenzo Cain's going outside the top 20 outfielders right now, 93rd overall. I don't know what people are missing on him. He's at least going to be a four category guy. He's going to contribute in all five categories probably. And there's huge impact potential in terms of, you know, counting stats and steals in Milwaukee, and the power could uptick a little bit for him there as well. It's certainly a better environment to hit than Kauffman Stadium was for the last couple of years for him. So I get it. He's a little bit older, but he's a guy who excites me given the combination of skill, situation, and draft day value where you have to get him in a draft. So I like Lorenzo Cain of all the guys in this tier. And I think, Mike, you picked him as your value pick for this tier as well in your article. So.
Yeah, it was kind of a coin flip for me between him and Cespedes, and I went with Cain. Yeah, you know, and I'm looking at the updated NFBC numbers for the last 2 weeks, and yeah, he has moved up like in the last 2 weeks. Now, this doesn't include drafts that are still going, like slow drafts, but he's 84th overall in drafts that have completed in the last 2 weeks. So there is some movement up on him. But even with that move up, I do agree that there's some value here. And it's not just the park. Like he's just a really good player. And, you know, two of the last 3 years, he has not been hurt. Like sometimes that injury mythology or the idea that someone is perpetually hurt, it takes a while for that to, you know, kind of dispel.
So those are 15 team leagues, right, Mike? NFBCs?
Most of them are. I think there's a couple that are shallower, but that's the general format.
So Cain last year, I think he was a top 10 outfielder in 15 team mixed leagues by valuations with the speed. $24 is what he earned last year. So
that sounds right.
If you can get him in, even if he's going what, 84th, that's like the sixth round pick. Like I don't have a problem with that. I like that play. We got a Twitter question here to wrap up the four star tiers, and I promise we're moving on. It's from Guy Kennedy, Brett, and he wants to know how much the humidor will affect AJ Pollock. I think now is the right time to maybe discuss it. He's not a power guy, but do we expect it to hurt his batting average and extra base hits? Also, any thoughts on the theory that stolen bases will go up if home runs decrease at Chase Field?
I think it's going to affect everybody. I think it's being overstated just because it's new, but it's not going to just affect home runs. And this is a really important part about what the humidor is going to do. It's going to impact exit velocity. It's going to impact how hard balls are hit in general, not just home runs. And it's going to decrease batting average at Chase Field in addition to power. There's not a single person who's going to be unaffected by the humidor. That said, I wouldn't be dropping someone, you know, 100 spots in Arizona if you're worried about it, or moving Robbie Ray up to Clayton Kershaw area. It's probably going to be a round or two swing for most players, except for Paul Goldschmidt, obviously. But if you're just worried about it being power, that's not the right way to think about it. There's no reason to think that stolen bases are going to increase as home runs decrease. I mean, that they have nothing to do with each other. That's not a thing.
Well said. Mike, these rankings came out before the humidor news, I want to say, if I'm remembering correctly.
So they did.
We already had some sort of omnipresent health concerns with Pollock to begin with. Would you have moved him down to the top of the three-star tier potentially?
Yeah, I probably would have put him like right there with like Desmond and Enciarte, and you know that's kind of to Brett's point where I see moving these guys down, but I wouldn't go crazy with it. And you know a point that I was making before is that idea that they're going to play half their games in other parks. Like they're not going to play every single game in Arizona. This is an important change. I don't want to understate it, but we do have to be careful not to go too far. But yeah, I would have probably knocked Pollock down, I think, to the 3-star, and you know, probably between Desmond and NCRT. I think that's where I would have put him.
So yet another reason to subscribe to BP. We have the Pecota projections. They've already been updated to reflect the potential humidor impact, which is very cool. I know you guys were talking about how you check that out, and it's very cool, especially on the pitching side. I understand it makes things a little more exciting for those Arizona starters, so that's very cool. If you are not a BP subscriber, I would recommend doing so, just so you can get Pecota. Even it's worth it. So let's talk about the 3-star tier, guys. There are 26 names in this tier, and that gets back to our conversation earlier about how some of these guys matter more than others, depending on your league context. So we didn't really go over a format for how we wanted to do this. So why don't we do it this way? We're each going to pick someone that we like in this tier and someone that we have some questions about, and then someone we think could either outperform or underperform where they are in the tier. So we'll hit on probably close to 10 guys, I think. So I'll start off with you, Brett. Who's a guy you want to talk about in this tier that you think or that you like more than a lot of the other names?
I am going to bypass the really obvious guy who I talk about all the time, in lieu of starting with Adam Eaton in the Nationals. He's going to be hitting towards the top of a really good lineup, and Eaton is a really good hitter. And we've kind of forgotten that a little bit because he missed just about all of last year with injury, but he's someone who can, you know, hit for some power. He can steal bases. He should score a ton of runs and hit for good average. You know, he's not one of those like superstar 5-category guys, but he's one of those really solid all around 5-category guys. And I think he's going a little bit later than he should at the moment. He is, you know, no matter where he hits in that lineup, whether it's first or second, I think it's going to be a boon for him. He's going outside the top 150 right now, which I think is kind of nuts.
Mike, who's the guy for you that you're targeting in this year?
Well, I'm going to take the guy that Brett was reluctant to talk about. I'm going to talk about Kyle Schwarber. I got him today in CBS NL only for $15. I think that's kind of nuts. You know, we're talking about somebody who turns 25 years old next month, is a prodigious power hitter, and you know, as a result of a bad an awful injury in 2016, you know, he kind of was rushed back. And I shouldn't say he was rushed back. He rushed back on his own accord. But as a result, you know, when he came back in the first half last year, he looked rusty. You could see it. Like, you could kind of see a hitter who, you know, was tentative. He didn't really trust his swings. He was, you know, chasing pitches or not even swinging at some pitches. And then in the second half, you started to see the Schwarber who I think we all kind of expected. He's never going to be a big batting average guy, but he hit 250, 253 in the second half with 17 home runs and 209 plate appearances. I'm not saying he's going to be a superstar, but there's an opportunity here for like a poor man's Chris Davis, the Oakland Chris Davis, and he's just not being priced that way. And you know, again, this kind of comes back to what we were talking about before with power, that there's a lot of power to go around, but there's still a way to smartly get power and kind of target it in the right places. And Schwarber is just somebody, if that's going to be his price point in Tout Wars next month, for example, and, you know, by the way, that's an OBP league, I will be all over him.
I detest the term post-hype sleeper, but it kind of fits here. The general description for a guy like Schwarber, where people now are swinging too negatively in how they view him. So I'm with you guys there. The guy I want to talk about real quick is Ian Desmond. He's at the top of this tier. I don't know. I was, for a long time, I was very anti-Ian Desmond because I sort of saw his contact profile just bottoming out, and he's kind of been able to make it work. And I don't know what it is. I do know what it is. It's the fact that he broke his hand and missed a huge chunk of last season. He never really seemed to get it going in Colorado, and people forget that 2 years ago he was a 2020 guy, and Coors, we know what it does, inflating batting average. He was running more last year. I think he had 15 steals and 370 plate appearances, which is way up for him in terms of what he's done in recent years. So he was running more. I think the power is going to be there. The batting average should be fine. Like, what is there? What am I missing on Ian Desmond? Because he's going pretty late in draft. I mean, he's going outside the top 100 picks right now. Like, he's going after guys like Yasiel Puig, Nick Castellanos, Ryan Braun. I'd much rather have Ian Desmond than those guys. So I think he's the obvious choice for me in this tier. Brett, who's a guy that you are a little bit negative on out of these 26 names?
I think I'm probably a little more negative than most on Mitch Haniger. I don't see either the high end performance or the ability to stay in the lineup to really be, you know, I get the 3-star ranking, and I don't think I would actually drop him into the 2-star tier. Just because there is some upside there, but I would not. He'd probably be the last guy in the 3-star tier that I would take.
Mike, do we need to have the Ronald Acuna discussion now, or should we
save it. The guy I'm negative on here, just because I don't see much more than what he's done the last couple of years, is Adam Jones. I mean, he's fine. But really, you know, we kind of saw what would happen with him, and you know, he lost a few steals, he lost some power. The game has improved around him. There's nothing wrong with taking Adam Jones. This goes back to the example I was talking about before. He's just a safe pick. Like, there's nothing like more to him. So in a deeper league, he definitely fits this tier. In a shallower league, I'd rather take a lot of the names in this tier over him. And that's kind of sad to say. You know, I think I point out in the article, like, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, you know, he was one of the, you know, he was the sixth best player in fantasy baseball in 2013.
Wow. That's quite a pull. The guy I'm going to take is, I don't want to beat a dead horse on Jose Martinez, but what is the upside with Martinez, really? I mean, if you assume he's going to get more playing time, he's a guy who hits for a high average, but there's not a ton of speed. I don't think the counting stats are going to be great. And the power ceiling, I question with him. So of all the names in this tier, I think he and Steven Souza are the two guys I'm kind of, and with Souza getting traded to Arizona tonight as we record this, those are the two guys I kind of would be shying away from here. Who's a guy, Brett, that you think is more likely to end up, or who has the greatest shot of ending up in the 4 or 5-star tier at the end of the season out of this group?
I want to say two different guys. I want to say a bunch of guys. There are some fun names in this tier.
Do it.
I am going to go with Ryan Braun.
Oh,
I know I'm going against the grain on this one. I'm not worried about his playing time, and I think his demise is greatly overstated. Mm-hmm. We all know what kind of hitter he's been over the last decade or so. But even last year, he only played in 104 games. He had 17 homers, stole 12 bases. He probably would have stolen 20 bases if he had stayed healthy for a full year. He would have hit 25 home runs. And yeah, he doesn't have a great chance to stay healthy for a full year, but he had played in 135 games at a minimum for the last 3 years before this. So, you know, I wouldn't really expect more than 135 to 140 games, but I think he's still perfectly capable of hitting, you know, 280 to 290 with close to 30 homers and 15 to 20 steals. I think people are overlooking him, and I think it's going to cost you.
Mike, who's the guy that you think has a shot to end up in the 4 or 5 star tier at the end of the season?
Well, you know, we've already talked about Schwarber. well, you know, the guy I kind of like here is another guy. I don't want to, you know, repeat the target thing, but Aaron Hicks is a shot just because he is a power speed guy. I mean, yes, the average kind of limits him a little bit. If you're in an OBP league, it's a different story. But I've seen some people talking or worrying that Clint Frazier or Jacoby Ellsbury are going to take some time from him. I just don't see that happening. The Yankees really like him. They really are invested in the kind of player he is. And he's somebody who, if he finishes, you know, he had 15 home runs and stole 10 bases in a little bit over half a season last year, maybe like 65% of a season. If Hicks finishes in that park with 25 home runs and 15 steals and a 270 average, that wouldn't surprise me. And in that lineup, I could see him cracking the 4-star tier. You know, you say 5-star. I don't really see that. There's a reason these guys are ranked here. You know, if we thought they'd be 5-star guys, we'd have them at least up in the middle of the 4-star.
Don't dampen the enthusiasm, Mike. Don't be a downer. Come on.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that with the pitchers. You know, there'll be plenty of pitchers in the 2 and 3-star who, you know, could wind up being elite.
All right, so the guy I'll take who probably, I think, has a really good shot to end up in the 4-star tier is Kevin Kiermaier. Missed a huge chunk of time last year. On June 8th, he had that weird injury. Remember, I think he injured his hip, and he missed 2 months. But when he came back in mid-August, he immediately became a staple of my free agent watches in shallower leagues, because down the stretch, in just over 150 plate appearances, he hit 306 with 8 home runs and 6 steals. The power is trending up with him. I know in the current environment with the baseball the way it is, I mean, I don't think 18 to 20 home runs is unrealistic if he can somehow stay on a field for an entire season. And obviously the way he plays defense with the reckless abandon puts that in jeopardy. But he's a guy I think has a really good shot to threaten for a 2020 season. And if Brett Gardner can do it in his mid-30s, like, I don't think ruling out Kevin Kiermaier is crazy. So I'll take Kiermaier. Who's a guy we think could drop into the 2-star or below tier, Brett? It doesn't have to be a long explanation, but who's that guy for you?
Hey, Brett Gardner.
Okay, fair.
I don't think he can keep up this level of performance, and I think there are enough outfield options in New York that he could see a little bit of a reduction in playing time.
Mike, who's that guy for you?
Well, you know, you use an analogy when we were talking about our starting pitcher ranks next week about Garrett Richards, the Lucy holding the football. You know, Michael Brantley's becoming that guy. Like, you know, already he might not make it on opening day, and they're talking about, you know, setbacks, and it's February. Like, I get it. He has the talent. He could be in the other category. He has the talent to be a 4 or 5-star guy, but if you take him too early, you know, I'd say inside the top 200 of ADP, you know, there's a good chance that you're going to, like, wind up holding the bag. You know, he's at 238 right now. I think that's okay. But there's a chance that this could just be a wasted pick.
The guy for me is Lewis Brinson. I'm notoriously the low person on him. I think of anyone I know who does this type of work. Brett, you're going to call me crazy for thinking Brinson isn't good, but there are some contact issues in the profile. I worry that if the bottom falls out, he gets sent back to AAA. So it's more playing time risk than anything for me. I know Miami has no one, but if Brinson's really struggling, I mean, are they going to put him out there for 600 plus plate appearances? I don't know. So that's my concern with
who else are they going to put out there? Derek Jeter,
Rafael Ortega. Scott Vince.
Like,
I wrote the Marlins chapter, and I don't even know who's on the team anymore. Like, that's how much it's changed. It's crazy. So, Marlins are bad, very bad, very bad. Although the Rays are giving them a run for their money, I think that's admirable. Got to give them some credit for that. Let's hit on the two-star tier, guys. We'll cover probably fewer names in this tier because this is otherwise going to be a two-hour podcast. So, Brett, same drill. Who's a guy you like in this tier? Because there are 17 names, and there are a lot of interesting guys here, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's the two-star tier. There are definitely going to be interesting guys here. If I had to pick one, I'm taking Jock Peterson. I think that there is at least a reasonable chance that the solution that he found at the end of 2017 can stick, and he can go back to being, you know, a really solid power threat with the ability to steal a couple bases here and there.
Mike, go ahead and take Nick Williams because I know you want to.
No, I'm going to take Conforto. You know, I know the risk is there, and I know spring training reports can be optimistic, and it's Mets with health, but I the upside here is just way too much to ignore in terms of what the ceiling is.
I will take Willie Calhoun because he can hit. He can flat out hit, and yes, there are massive issues defensively for him where saying he's a liability is maybe putting it too mildly. There are some definite, you know, odds here that he ends up in a platoon and it's not great, but out of all the guys in this tier, like he can hit, and I would bet on the bat, especially in a deeper format. I'd feel comfortable doing that. Brett, who's the guy you do not envision yourself drafting this year out of this tier?
I don't envision myself drafting Michael Conforto. I hate to do this back to back. I mean, I was gonna take him. I like his talent. I do not trust the shoulder. I really don't. There becomes a point where the risk proposition is worth it, but I don't think he's going there right now.
Okay, Mike, who's the guy for you that stands out?
Hunter Renfro. I get the upside with him, and you know he's got the power. But you know, as we saw last year, when he's not on, like he's just so bad, and he's a risk to get demoted. Like there's just a lot of risk with him.
Speaking of unexciting guys, I'm gonna take Cole Calhoun, who. This is the exact type of player who gets hurt the most by the current home run landscape, where it's sort of a low batting average. He doesn't really run. The counting stats are mediocre. He's probably only going to push 20 home runs in a best case scenario. That guy is just so boring, and there's a total lack of upside there that if I'm going to take a guy in this tier, I want to go for the upside as opposed to the high floor, I guess, is what I mean. So I'm not interested in Cole Calhoun. That's where I'm at. All right. Anyone else that we haven't talked about that we need to discuss in the two-star tier before we get to the one-star lottery tickets? I have one name, Mike. Avisel Garcia. It's quite evident you think there's some regression coming based on where you ranked him.
Yeah, you know, he had a 392 BABIP, and I've kind of memorized that number. And, you know, his contact rate improves, so, you know, he certainly improved as a hitter. But as I pointed out, you know, if he only hits, like, 290, he loses a lot. Like, a lot of his value last year was wrapped up in his batting average.
Yeah, our colleague Mark Barry wrote about him for his outfielder to avoid, and after reading it, he kind of sold me. I was kind of on the fence about it, but yeah, Garcia's a risky proposition. Brett, is there anyone else for you here, or are we ready for the one stars?
No, I think we're ready.
Okay. I like to be thorough. The one stars. You guys know who I'm going to take, so please don't take him. But, Brett, I'll open up the floor to you. I know who you're going to take. Damn it. This is going to be way too predictable. But this is like Ben's we need Bovada real-time odds for this, because I know who you're going to take. But go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to take David Dahl. There, you know, even if he only plays 3 to 4 months in Colorado, it's still 3 to 4 months in Colorado, and he's got a lot of all-around talent. He can hit for a little power, he can steal some bases, he can hit for some average. I think it could be, you know, I think he could play like a three-star outfielder when he's out there, possibly, you know, if he really explodes, he could even be a little bit higher than that. But I mean, clearly there's risk, but there's just plenty of upside there.
Mike, who are you going to take?
Well, I try to avoid taking my value pick, but I can't help it here. I'm going to take Lonnie Chisenhall. He had a little bit of a breakout last year. He was a top prospect. You know, I know this goes back a ways, but the ability and the talent was always there. And, you know, yeah, he lost a lot of time in the second half to injuries, but there's a 25 home run hitter with a good batting average lurking here. You know, assuming he gets the playing time, and, you know, I mentioned this with Brantley, he should get the playing time. So, you know, again, you're talking in the one star tier, you're talking about a flyer guy. He's just a flyer that I like for 2018.
Okay. You guys both know who I'm taking, but Victor Robles. I don't understand why there isn't more excitement concerning him. I mean, last time I checked, I wrote my target piece on him. He was going outside the top 300 picks in redraft leagues right now, and I don't... Mike, you and I have talked about it, but the path to playing time, everybody wants to say, well, he's blocked, he's not going to get called up. And yeah, maybe, but Michael Taylor has exactly one season where he wasn't objectively terrible, and it's not like Adam Eaton and Bryce Harper are the most durable guys. I feel like I'm repeating the same points over and over every time I talk about Robles, but he's insanely talented. He runs. He's a threat to steal 30 bases if he gets every day at bats from like May on. It's an insanely valuable fantasy profile, and no one seems to care. I can't figure this out.
He's gonna find a way onto the team this year. It's just a question of when that happens.
Right. So. Yeah, Brett, do you have any idea as to what the timeline would be for Robles as far as call-up? Because he got major league service time last year down the stretch, but do you have like a rough estimate of when you think he's up and has a real fantasy impact? Because I don't think I've ever asked you this.
I think it's going to take a relatively major injury to one of their starting outfielders. You know, I'm more of a believer, I think, in Michael Taylor than most people. Obviously, I like Adam Eaton and Bryce Harper. I talked about Eaton before. Harper was my first round pick in labor. They are not models of health, so I think it's perfectly reasonable. But, you know, that said, I you know, they do have a fair amount of outfield depth in terms of day-to-day and short-term injuries. I mean, they've got Howie Kendrick. They've got Brian Goodwin. They've got guys that can cover for a week or so without calling up Robles. I mean, Robles hasn't played in AAA yet. He is an extreme talent. But, you know, they could keep him down all year and no one would really think twice about it. I do think there's a – that said, I do think someone will get hurt in that outfield and he will get probably, you know, 200 to 250 at bats. And he'll be valuable enough in those at bats to go where he's going now. You know, and with that said, he does have the upside of being able to force his way in May and really spending a full year in there. You know, most of the time we talk about talent kind of making their way into the lineup, but you know, there is a lot of talent in that Nationals lineup. So while it's true, it's a little bit more dangerous of a situation than some others.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think if you're going to bet on talent, Robles is the guy to do it with. I mean, the example I kind of gravitate towards is Cody Bellinger last year, where, I mean, theoretically he was blocked all, you know, coming into the year. We weren't considering him at all because he was blocked, and then all of a sudden he wasn't. So I don't know, things change, and you want to be holding those shares if and when he gets an opportunity this season, because no one's stealing bases anymore, and Robles is incredibly fast. I don't think people properly appreciate how fast he actually is. So he could make a huge impact, and I'm on board. Let's do it. Anyone else we need to discuss for as far as outfielders go? Or I think that about does it. We're saving the Ronald Acuna debate for another day, because that's like a whole separate podcast, right?
Yep.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, great. So before we wrap up here, we got a few Twitter questions for the show. I sent out the bat signal and you guys responded, so thank you. And we're going to roll through these quickly, Mike and I. First one comes from Jeff Good at Io Guppy. There's no A, so it's not Iowa Guppy. It's Io Guppy or Low Guppy. I can't read Twitter. How do you value Winker, Schebler, Duvall now that it sounds like the three of them will be sharing two corner outfield spots in Cincinnati this season?
Well, you know, I kind of addressed this in the tiers. Like, I'd put them all in the one-star tier, and I know it's sort of a cop-out, but as much as I like Winker's potential, if he's not going to be a full-timer and he's only going to get like 450, 500 plate appearances at most, I think you have to discount him. And, you know, Duvall is, you know, we've seen this. He has a strong first half, a weak second half. Like, all three of them just have limitations, even as full-timers. And if they're not going to be in that full-time situation, I think you have to discount all three of them. And outside of deeper leagues, I'm avoiding the trio.
Our next question comes from Max Margolis at Max B. Margolis. Talk about outfield prospects, please. Well, I got some bad news for you. We're not gonna do that, but you can tune into Tino, where they will be talking about outfield prospects. I highly recommend that. But he wants to know specifically about Dustin Fowler and Franchi Cordero. I'll just say this. We probably should have ranked Dustin Fowler in the one stars. I would have been.
Yeah, the more I look at it, the more I think that he was on the cusp for me to begin with, and the more I look at him and think about him, you know, Boog Powell is the player standing in front of him for playing time. If Fowler's healthy, he's going to play. That's really what it comes down to. And you're looking at a guy who conservatively could hit 15 home runs and steal 15 bases.
At this time last year, he was considered, well, not this time last year, but at the time of his promotion last year, he was considered a better, more polished, ready prospect than Clint Frazier. So,
yeah, the Yankees didn't bring him up because they didn't think he was ready, sure.
Right. So I think depending on how he's hitting and how he looks health-wise in spring training, he's a guy definitely to watch and to invest in. I talked about this with James Anderson, I want to say, on this podcast a couple months ago now, but yeah, he's very high on Fowler, and I think with good reason. Next question. I'm not doing Nick Castellanos. Nope.
I saw that question. Yeah.
Well, like, sure, he's going to be an outfielder now, but you want to use him at third base this season, right?
Yeah, I mean, you should use him. If you're using him in the outfield, it's in an AL only, and it's because you had an injury. Yeah. That's it.
At Jason Kaiser, at Jason P. Kaiser, how about Brandon Drury in New York?
Well, I mean, how about him? You know, yeah. I look at this more. I was thinking less about Drury, and I was thinking more about, you know, how it's going to affect the rest of the infield. And I think the guy, it kind of hurts a little bit. Miguel Andujar looked like he had a path to playing time right on opening day. You know, now it seems pretty likely that he's going to wind up in AAA. And, you know, the Yankees have already said they like the bat. He needs to work in his defense. So he'll be up eventually. But if you were looking at Andujar as someone you're going to get a full season out of, I think you have to discount that. You know, Drury to me is just a guy. Like, you look at his numbers the last 2 years. He's been solid, but there really isn't much there. Like he was kind of like replacement level, a little bit above that. So he could be a player in Yankee Stadium who gets some value from that, from getting a bit of a power boost. But he's coming from a park pre-Humidor that already had the power boost, and he had 13 home runs, 135 games last year. So, Drury is kind of a really deep mixed or only guy for me.
He's the rich man's Michael, right? He's going to hold down the hot corner until Gleyber Torres is ready in May.
Yeah, he's kind of like, Headley with maybe a little more power and a little less average. That's kind of what he is.
He's passable. This is probably, like you alluded to, this is more like Miguel Andujar insurance than anything else, like in case he's not ready.
Well, and for the Yankees, though, what it is, it's an upgrade on Ronald Torres.
Better. A little bit.
When they have to eventually hopefully have Torres and Andujar in the infield to go with, Didi and Bird, you have a better utility player. So it's that too.
Yeah.
It was a smart baseball move for the Yankees, but for fantasy, I just, it doesn't really move the needle for me.
So that's going to do it for all of us here at Flags Fly Forever. Thank you for listening. For Brett Sayer, Mike Gianella, this is George Bissell saying until our next show, we'll be back next week to talk about starting pitchers. That's the big boy. That's going to be a long show. So I hope, you get a pot of coffee ready, Mike, and you're gonna be set. Who do you like? Give me a starting pitching sleeper.
Well, define sleeper. Like how deep are we going in ADP?
Yeah, give me a few sleepers from my draft. I don't know, outside the top 200.
Well, that eliminates
not
junk,
Luke
right?
Weaver.
Which, I don't like Luke Weaver. So,
but
you
not
can...
in that ADP range.
Dispel that.
Where's John Gray going, by the way?
162.
Oh, he sort of counts. It's like the James Paxton zone from last year.
I mean, I like Dennelson. He's at 209. We've talked about him. Blake Snell at 214, I think is pretty solid. Taiwan Walker, and our new editor, Zach Steinhorn has kind of pointed this out. Of all the pitchers who could benefit from the Humidor, Walker with his high fly ball rate could really benefit. So that could be some sneaky value that could fall under the radar. Like everyone's talking about Greinke and Ray, but Taiwan Walker is a pitcher because of that fly ball profile who could have some boost or some helium that we're not seeing yet.
I don't understand. Well, maybe it's that he might not have a rotation spot. Mike Clevinger, I mean, what are people missing there?
I think that's what it is. I think they're telling you about sending him the AAA because he has an option, and I think that's turning people off. Honestly, we'll get to this next week, but really almost anyone outside of the top 200, it becomes if that's your guy, and if it's someone you have a feel for, he's going to be a sleeper.
Is Denelson Lamet's the guy for me? He's going outside the top 200. 213th
in ADP. Yeah, what was his strikeout rate last year? I know it was pretty.
It was just under 11, 10.9
for 9. Yeah.
That's very good. I wrote about him. By the way, I'll plug the piece. We have our starting pitcher targets piece coming out. You and I both wrote something. You wrote about John Gray, your boy.
Yeah.
I love John Gray too. But Lamet, I mean, he's so damn good. It's crazy. I will say this, he doesn't really have a third pitch, which could be a huge problem, but based on a lot of the metrics, his control is pretty lackluster. He's going to walk guys, but I made the analogy, he's basically Carlos Carrasco with bad control. He pitches in San Diego. that's fun outside the top 200 picks. So, Denelson Lamet, everybody. Come back next week. It's going to be a real fun show. We're going to basically do that for an hour and a half. So,
at least.
Absolutely. So until the next show, everybody, have a good night. So long.
See you later.